I'd always dreamt of seeing California, a setting glorified in many of the television shows I'd grown up watching. Even though I was probably the opposite of a stereotypical California girl, I'd itched to see the Pacific Ocean and experience the carefree living I'd always associated with the Left Coast. It always seemed like the polar opposite of Brooklyn. Delia's brother Abe's place was right on the water. As I sat on the sand, listening to the crashing waves, thoughts of Graham were never far behind. Delia was back at the condo sleeping in, and I was taking advantage of the alone time to enjoy the quiet beach before it became crowded. My attention drifted diagonally across the sand to the only other people on the beach. A woman and a little girl were sitting next to each other with their legs crossed in child's pose, a position I recognized from the one yoga class I ever took. Their eyes were closed as they breathed in and out, taking in the sounds of the ocean. Desperate to calm my mind, I did something I normally never would. Approaching them, I asked, "Do you mind if I join you?" "Not at all," the woman said. "We're almost done with our warm-up meditation, though. Take a seat on the sand and do what we're doing." Closing my eyes, I willed the anxious thoughts of Graham and Genevieve away and tried to focus simply on my breathing and the sounds around me. Over the next half hour, I followed along as this mother and daughter moved together with synchronized precision, teaching me various positions such as downward dog. I tried not to think about the fact that they reminded me a bit of Genevieve and Chloe. This girl was only a little older than Graham's daughter. I definitely felt calmer by the time we were finished. The woman handed me a water from her bag.
"Are you from around here?"
"No, actually, I'm here for the week, visiting from New York."
"I've always wanted to go to New York,"
the little girl said, turning to her mother.
"Maybe your father and I can take you next year."
Excitement filled the girl's eyes.
"Really?"
"Do you take a lot of family trips?" I asked them.
"Mostly short weekend ones, yes. My husband and I share custody of Chloe with her mother."
I nearly choked on my water.
"Did you say Chloe?"
I turned to the girl. "Your name is Chloe?"
"Uh-huh."
She smiled. "That's a beautiful name."
"Thank you."
Turning to the woman, I asked, "So, you're her stepmom?"
"Yes."
"Wow, I just assumed that she's my daughter because we're close?"
"Yes."
"Well, you'd be right. She is my daughter.
I don't consider her any less of a real child because she's not blood related to me."
"I'm lucky to have two moms," Chloe said.
I nodded in silence. "Yes, you are."
"Well, we have to run. Chloe has ballet practice."
She held out her hand.
"I'm Natasha, by the way."
I took it.
"Soraya."
"It was wonderful to meet you, Soraya. Hope you enjoy your stay in Hermosa Beach."
"Maybe we'll see you in New York next year,"
Chloe said, jumping up and down. I smiled.
"Maybe. Thanks again for the yoga class."
Left alone again on the sand, I contemplated what that encounter meant. In the days leading up to my ending things with Graham, I'd been looking for signs to justify that my leaving him was the right thing. I wasn't looking for any signs at all today, yet that one hit me in the face like a ton of bricks. Chloe. That was no coincidence. I'd never once considered that a child might view having a stepmother as gaining a parent rather than losing one to another person. My own personal experiences had been guiding my decisions. Teresa never even tried to get to know me, let alone acted like a second mother. She never made an effort to include me in anything that my father and her daughters did together.
It wouldn't have been like that with Chloe and me. Why had I never thought of it this way? Fear, stress, and guilt had blinded me, and now I was seeing things for the first time from an entirely different perspective. Now that it was too late. Later that afternoon, Delia and I were relaxing in the air-conditioned living room after an afternoon at the beach. I'd impulsively picked up my phone and opened up the text message chain between Graham and me, looking through all of the old texts from the beginning of our time together. The very last one from him was sent the morning before he caught me with Marco. It simply said, "I love you." Delia didn't know what I'd been doing for the past several minutes. She probably thought I was just surfing the internet. When she noticed the tears start to fall from my eyes, she came around and suddenly snatched the phone from my hands. "Looking at old texts from Graham? That's it. I'm taking this and shutting it off. I didn't take you all the way to California for this shit." "You can't just take my phone." "Watch me," she said, holding down the power button. "You'll get it back in New York."
Chapter 31. Graham. My phone vibrated just as I was leaving the office. "Hello, Genevieve?" "Why haven't you answered my texts?" "Busy day." "I was hoping you could come by after work. We need to talk about what happened between us." "I'm already on my way there to see Chloe." "All right. We'll see you when you get here." The last thing I was in the mood for was to rehash the other night with Genevieve. Up to my ears in work from having been preoccupied over the past few weeks, the last two nights I'd skipped going to see my daughter again because it was way past her bedtime by the time I left work. That couldn't happen again. I planned to have dinner with Chloe before heading back to the office after hours. Raindrops were pelting the windows of the town car. Almost every night on the way home, I'd instinctually go to text Soraya, forgetting for a split second that we were done. Then that awful acidic feeling of reality souring in the pit of my stomach would linger. It angered me that I'd trusted her so fully. After what happened with Genevieve and Liam, I was probably the least trusting person around. But I would have trusted Soraya with my life. How could I have not seen a change of heart coming? The whole thing just didn't make any fucking sense. "Not sure how long I'll be here, Louis. I'll text you when I'm ready to head back to the office," I said as we pulled up to Genevieve's brownstone. Genevieve greeted me, taking my wet jacket and hanging it up. She stood there awkwardly, playing with her pearls. "About the other night, I..." "Can we please not discuss this until I've seen my daughter?" "Okay." She looked down at the floor. "She's in her room." Chloe was playing with her dollhouse. "Graham Cracker, I missed you." Bending down and pulling her into a hug, I said, "I missed you too, smart cookie."
"Are you still sad?"
"What do you mean?"
"About Soraya?"
"Why do you ask?"
"Your smile isn't as big as it usually is."
She was so perceptive. Apparently she didn't take after her clueless father. The last thing I wanted was for my daughter to think that something was seriously wrong with me, or that it might have been her fault. Trying to rack my brain for a way to explain, I ultimately decided that it was better to just be honest. "I am a little sad, Chloe, yes, about Soraya. But that's not why I wasn't here over the past 2 days. I got out of work very late, but I won't let another 2 days go by without coming to see you again. Okay?"
"My daddy used to work late a lot."
I wondered how much of that was actual work or Liam just fucking around on Genevieve. "He did he?"
"So, when will you stop being sad?"
"Not sure. But you know what? I already feel better just being with you."
"That's how I felt when I met you. After my daddy died, you made me feel better even though I was still sad."
"I am your daddy. And I love you so much." Pulling her into me, I kissed her forehead. "I'm glad I could do that for you." Chloe and I played with her dollhouse for a bit until Genevieve entered and knelt down to join us. I could feel her staring at me, knowing she was eager to discuss things. After the other night, I was apprehensive about being alone with her again. Although, with Chloe home, not much was going to be able to go down. "Dinner will be ready in 5, Genevieve said before exiting the room. Genevieve had baked a homemade prosciutto and fig flatbread pizza for us and a plain cheese one for Chloe. She kept filling my wine glass with Cabernet, and I let her, knowing it would help take the edge off of whatever discussion we were going to have later. After I tucked Chloe in and read her a bedtime story, Genevieve was waiting for me in the kitchen, polishing off the last of the wine. Before she could open her mouth, I said, "There's really no need to get into it." "I need to apologize again. I came on too strongly. I don't know what came over me. Seeing you lying there so comfortably in my house, it just took me back. That, coupled with the fact that we'd had too much to drink. It wasn't the alcohol, and you know it. You've made your intentions very clear for some time." "You're right. Inebriated or not, I want you back, Graham. I'll do whatever it takes to have the opportunity to make you happy again." "You thought that showing me your pussy was going to make me forget everything? What you did?" When Genevieve disrobed in front of me that night, I jumped up off the couch and demanded that she put her clothes back on. She'd actually seemed shocked at my rejection. "Did you assume that because of my breakup with Soraya that I was going to give in? What happened with Soraya won't change the fact that I simply can't ever trust you again, Jen. And while I think you'd be great for a quick revenge fuck, I'm sure as hell not going to screw my child's mother if I have no intention of ever being with her." "You're not thinking straight, Graham. We have a small window of opportunity now to change our daughter's life. I'm not going to be able to wait around for you forever." "Let me save you some time," I leaned in. "Stop waiting." "You don't know what you're saying. How can you just close the door on that possibility so easily?" "You closed the door, Genevieve. You closed it and threw away the key." "I made a mistake." "Shh, you'll wake her," I said. Closing my eyes for composure, I took a deep breath and said, "Chloe will always have my love. You, as her mother, will always have my respect. But you lost your chance at a future with me the day you decided to betray my trust. I want my daughter to have self-respect. I need to set a good example by holding on to my own." Unable to tolerate any more of this conversation, I walked over to where my jacket was hanging and put it on. "My driver is outside. I need to get back to the office. Thank you for dinner. I'll be back tomorrow night." My office was completely dark, except for a small amount of light coming from the green banker's lamp on my desk. Fidgeting with my watch, all I could think about was that fucking pile of newspapers taunting me from across the room. Over the past week, I'd repeatedly nixed the idea of going through all of the Ask Ida responses for any potential clues into Soraya's mindset. Between admitting my sadness to Chloe and the argument with Genevieve tonight, I was feeling weaker. Bringing the stack over to my desk, I sifted through each edition's Ask Ida column like a lunatic. After thoroughly dissecting over a dozen responses, nothing stood out as unusual. That is, until I got to response number 20. A woman had written in with a dilemma about whether or not she should break up with her boyfriend whom she was deeply in love with, all so he could get back with the mother of his child. For the sake of the child. I looked at the date, which was shortly before we broke up. The other details outlined exactly what happened with Genevieve and me. My heart started to hammer against my chest. The name, Teresa Brooklyn. Teresa was her stepmother's name. If there was any doubt that Soraya had written in the question, the response only confirmed it. Ida's advice was to break up with the boyfriend and suggested that Teresa make it appear as though she were cheating on him so that the poor fool would cut her off more easily. Smart over heart, Ida had advised. I threw the newspaper across the room. Everything was starting to make sense. Soraya lied. She wasn't really dating that Guido. She was pretending to. Anger over Ida's response transformed into elation. I'd never been happier to learn that someone had lied to me in my entire life. I read the beginning of the question again. "I've been dating a man for almost 2 months who I've fallen deeply in love with." She'd fallen in love with me. Deeply. I froze, paralyzed first by shock, then intense relief, then an overwhelming urge to just get to her. I fell deeply too, baby. So fucking deep. I immediately picked up my phone and dialed her number. It kept ringing and went to voicemail. I dialed it again, same thing. I wrote out a text, "Where are you?" There was no answer for 5 minutes. I texted again. "I need to see you. Are you home?" Unable to wait any longer, I grabbed my coat and called for Louis to pick me up. When we arrived to Soraya's apartment in Brooklyn, there was no answer. Looking up at the window, I could see that the lights were off. Where the fuck was she? "Where to next, sir?" Louis asked as I returned to the car. 8th Avenue, Tig's Tattoo Shop. When we arrived, I told Louis to wait outside. I was going to need that car ready to book it once I got Tig to tell me where she was. Tig blew out the last of his cigarette.
"Suit, what the hell are you doing here? It's late, we're about to close."
"Where is she?"
"She's not here."
"Where is she?" I repeated louder.
"She's in California with Dell."
"California?"
"Yeah, they went on a girls' trip, just the two of them."
"Where are they staying?"
"I'm not telling you where they're fucking staying. You're her fucking crazy ex."
"I need to call the hotel. She's not answering her phone. Actually, call Delia. Tell her I need to speak to Soraya."
"No."
I approached him, getting uncomfortably close to his face. "Give me the info, Tig. You have no idea what I'm capable of in this state of mind."
"Oh, I know what you're capable of, pretty boy. You wrecked my cousin Marco's jaw."
Tig seemed to realize that he'd slipped up. His cousin? He was in on the act. "He's not her boyfriend at all, is he?"
"I didn't say that."
"I read the fucking Ida column, Tig. I know she made the whole thing up. Whether you admit to it or not, I know the truth. You need to tell me where she is."
"What are you going to charter your fancy jet to California? With your money, I'll let you hire a private investigator. You're not getting her whereabouts from me."
A light bulb went off in my brain as I walked over to a small box hidden in the corner of the shop. "What's this over here? Your stash of weed? I bet the cops would love to know about this."
"You wouldn't do that."
"I will do anything to get to Soraya right now. Do I look like I'm kidding?"
"Jesus, your fucking eyes are demonic."
"Tell me where she is, Tig." He angrily scrolled his phone, then wrote an address down on a scrap of paper before throwing it at me.
"Here, it's Dell's brother's condo in Hermosa Beach."
I patted the paper to my chest and walked backward toward the door.
"Thank you. No hard feelings. I wouldn't have snitched on you. Soraya would never speak to me again. And I couldn't risk that, because I really fucking love that woman." "Whatever, MVP."
For the first time, though, Tig looked like he actually believed me. He shook his head, his mouth curving into a slight smile.
"You'd better not hurt her, suit."
I'd hopped the next commercial flight to LAX. When I arrived at the condo, no one was there. Soraya's phone continued to go to voicemail, as did Delia's. At least I knew she'd be coming back here. According to Tig, they were scheduled to be here another few days. Taking a walk down to the beach, I decided I needed to let her know I was here. I started shooting off a series of texts to her, pouring out my heart, even though she hadn't been responding to any of my messages. I hadn't been paying attention, and somehow knocked into a muscular man walking a little spotted goat.
"What the fuck?"
"Watch where you're going, mate,"
he said with an Australian accent. "Sorry, man, my head is not together today."
"You all right?"
"I'm looking for someone." He nodded his head knowingly.
"A woman?"
"What gave it away?"
"You remind me of myself a few years back, roaming this beach, lovesick over my Aubrey, oblivious to everyone around me. It all works out if it's meant to be, you know."
"Why are you walking a goat?"
"It's a long story. If you want to take a walk with us, I'll give you the dates. Get your mind off the woman for a bit. Till you find her."
His name was Chance Bateman. He was a former Australian soccer star now living in Hermosa Beach. He told me the story of how he'd met his wife, Aubrey, at a rest stop in Nebraska. They went on an adventurous road trip together but ended up getting separated for some time after. But things worked out in the end. I proceeded to share my own story with him. The one big similarity was that we'd each met our women in the unlikeliest of places.
Think about it, mate. These are not coincidences. An Australian and an uptight princess from Chicago happened to connect in the middle of bumfuck Nebraska. Yet she was my cellmate. And you said you didn't normally take the train. For some reason, that morning you did. You have to trust in fate. It's all written. Doesn't matter if it's today or in 2 years. If it's meant to be, it will happen one way or the other.
Chance looked down at his phone.
Gotta run. You're a good chap. If it all works out with your lady, you should bring her by our house for some brekkie before you leave town.
This guy was probably one of the most charismatic people I'd ever met. I smiled for the first time in what felt like forever. I just might take you up on that. He patted me once on the shoulder.
Good luck, mate.
As if to say goodbye, the goat let out a long,
baa.
Watching him walk away with the animal, I shook my head in amazement. I shot out one additional text to Soraya, still unsure if she'd received any of my other texts from earlier. I just ran into a man walking a fucking goat.
Chapter 32. Soraya. Delia was in the shower. It was my one opportunity to see if I could locate my phone. She'd agreed to shut off hers, too. We'd been living without our phones for over 24 hours, and I was seriously getting the shakes. Ransacking her purse, I couldn't believe it was that easy. She'd simply put it in the most obvious place. She must have trusted me when she obviously shouldn't have. The apple appeared on the screen as the phone powered on. My heart sank. Several missed messages and texts. They were all from Graham. Did something happen? Scrolling up to the top of the text chain, I swallowed nervously as I read from the beginning. Where are you? I need to see you. Are you home? You lied. I figured it all out. You forgot one very important thing when you did what you thought was right. You can't make me stop loving you. If I'm not happy, my daughter can sense it. She already has. I know you think your life would have been better if your parents were together, but did you ever consider that maybe it would have been worse? If your father were physically present, but depressed and withdrawn as he longed for another woman. My daughter will understand that my love for you doesn't have anything to do with my love for her. Your father sucked at communicating that. I will learn from his mistakes. You will help me. We will do it together. My heart started beating out of control when I read the next message. I just landed in Hermosa Beach. I'm coming to you. Fuck, you're not home. Tell me where to find you. I'll come back. I'm at the beach, and all I can think about is holding you again, kissing you, and smacking that ass so hard for ever believing I could be better off without you. The last text made no sense, but caused me to chuckle. I just ran into a man walking a fucking goat. Poor Delia. Her head was full of shampoo when I burst into the bathroom rambling on about Graham's texts. I'd expected her to be angry, that I had broken our pact to forego cell phones. But she wasn't. After she rinsed off, she hopped out of the shower and found me rummaging through my suitcase for something other than the grungy, haven't-been-washed-in-3-days sweatpants I was wearing. Are you okay? I was wrong. I shouldn't have made the decision for us. I love him, Del. Graham's right. I wouldn't be taking him away from his daughter. I'd be giving her another person in her life who loves her. I'm not Teresa. I want to be involved in Chloe's life. I realized last night that I wasn't just mourning the loss of Graham. I'd also lost a little girl I loved. What are you going to do? Drop down on my knees and beg for forgiveness? Del snort laughed.
He's a man. If you drop to your knees, you won't be able to beg for anything. Your mouth will be too full. She had a point. Stripping out of my clothes, I ran back into the bathroom in a bra and panties to wash up. As I used the face cloth to wash my face, under my arms, and all of the important parts, I spoke to Del. I owe him such a big apology. I hope I haven't ruined things for us. He seems to understand why I did it already. I just hope I can make things right again. Del leaned against the bathroom door as I brushed my teeth. She was holding some of my clothes and held them out to me when I finished. Here, wear this. Your tits bulge out of the top of that shirt. They'll go a long way toward making it right again. I smiled as I slipped on my pants. These tits are how it all started, you know. And that feather on your foot. I get credit for some of this, too, since it was my husband who inked you with the identifying mark that helped Mr. Big Prick solve the Soraya puzzle. The mention of the tattoo on my foot made me look down. My feet were bare, and I stared at the feather. Graham had gotten the same one inked over his heart. How could I have thought that being without him was good for either of us? We'd been together a little over a month when he'd made my name permanent on his body. He was the most romantic, arrogant, stuck-up suit I'd ever come across in my life. And he was perfect for me. Washed and dressed, I flitted back into the bedroom in search of some perfume. Del continued to follow me around. Are you going to text him, or just wait for him to show up here again? I don't know. What do you think I should do? My heart was racing with anticipation. If I had to wait much longer to get him, it might explode. Del was quiet as I brushed out my hair and slipped on my flip-flops. Then she picked up the phone and called Tig. I half-listened as she spoke. When she hung up, she grinned at me. I have a plan for you to reunite with MVP. A plan? Do you trust me? Of course I do. Then take off your shirt again.
Chapter 33. Graham. A few blocks from where Soraya was staying, I stumbled upon an old red caboose that was turned into a diner. Smiling, I decided to go in and grab a cup of coffee. I'd traveled all morning and then walked the beach for hours waiting to hear back from Soraya. Some caffeine was definitely in order if I was going to have the stamina to go at it as hard as I planned to when I finally got my woman back in my arms. "I'll have a large black coffee," I said to the waitress as I slid into the booth. The entire inside of the restaurant was retrofitted to function as a diner, yet much of the original interior of the railroad car was intact. I was sitting in an actual train seat when my phone buzzed in my pocket. Seeing Soraya's name on my screen made my entire body instantly jumpstart back to life. I swiped to open, and was surprised to find it wasn't a text at all. It was a picture. Or pictures, actually. Very unexpected ones. A picture of her gorgeous tits, a picture of her sexy legs, and a picture of her very fuckable ass. The three shots were similar to our first text exchange, the photos she had left behind on my phone when she stormed out of my office. Only I could see these photos were taken recently from the tan lines that now marked her skin. Her middle finger that was flipping me off between her cleavage that first time was noticeably absent from the new photos. I saved the pictures to my iPhone and texted back immediately. Graham, where are you? Those are my tits, legs, and ass. I'm coming to get them. As I sat inside the diner waiting for her response, I got a sense of deja vu. That guy walking a goat today was absolutely right. Here I was sitting in a train car looking at pictures of the tits, legs, and ass of a woman who drove me nuts. Again. There were no coincidences in life. This journey we took, however fucked up of a turn it made, was meant to happen for us. Soraya, I'm out with Delia. I won't be back for a few hours. I raked my fingers through my hair in frustration, I needed to see her now. If that wasn't physically possible, I at least needed to know for sure that we were on the same page. Graham, tell me I'm right. I can't wait any longer. You didn't cheat, and you did this for me and Chloe. The wait, as she texted back, was agonizing. Soraya, I asked Marco to pretend to be with me. He's Tig's cousin. I would never have really cheated on you. Graham, you should have talked to me. Soraya, I know that now. It was stupid. Graham, it was, and I'm going to put you over my lap and spank your ass as punishment later. Soraya, promise? Graham, I want to promise you lots of things, sweetheart, but I'd prefer to do that in person. What time will you be back? Soraya, I'm not sure. I'll text you when I get back to the condo. Where are you? Graham, a few blocks away, sitting on a train. Soraya, a train? Graham, don't worry, it's immobile. I'm not going anywhere without you. Soraya, promise? Graham, nothing will keep me from you, Soraya. I sat in that train for more than 2 hours waiting. Soraya had said she would text me when she arrived back at the condo, and my patience was dwindling. Unable to sit still any longer, I walked the boardwalk until my phone finally buzzed. Soraya, I'm back. Graham, on my way. Delia's brother's condo was on the 6th floor, unit 6G. I pushed the button for the elevator and waited impatiently. The light above the doors slowly illuminated each number as it climbed the floors. The damn thing was crawling and still needed to make its way back down. I couldn't wait that long. Finding the door to the stairs, I started up the first of 6 flights. By the 3rd set, I should have been starting to slow down, but instead, I began to take them 2 at a time. My heart was beating out of my chest, yet I wasn't even slightly winded. I needed to get to her. At the start of the 6th flight, I full-on ran the rest of the way up. When I reached her floor, I flung open the hall door and continued to sprint down the hall. Adrenaline was pumping through my veins when I arrived in front of Unit 6G. I tried to take a deep, calming breath, but it was impossible to relax. My chest heaved up and down. I need to see her so badly. I knocked and waited. When it finally opened, I froze for a moment. Soraya. God, she was fucking incredible. She was standing at the door wearing only a hot pink bra and panties, and her tips were dyed hot pink to match. Never in my life had I seen such beauty. I stood there for a full minute, just taking her in. Then I finally spoke. What does hot pink mean? She looked me in the eyes. Love? It means I'm in love? My eyes closed. For a second I thought I might pussy out right there at the threshold and cry. I was so fucking happy my emotions needed an outlet. I'm afraid to come in. Why? Her face momentarily dropped. Because there's so much I want to do to you, so much I feel right now, I'm afraid I won't be gentle. Her cheeks flushed a bit. I don't want you to be gentle. I want you to be you. A bossy, stuck-up ass with an unexpectedly sweet side. A dad that is going to love his daughter unconditionally no matter what and never leave her behind. And a dominant partner in bed who sometimes needs it a little rough. I want all of you, Graham. I stepped inside and shut the door behind me. Oh, you're going to get it all right. My mouth, my hand, my fingers, my body. My cock. Taking her into my arms, I kissed her with everything I had. Between kisses, she apologized over and over again. I'm sorry for what I did. I thought I was doing the right thing. I know you did. Just promise me you'll never push me away again, baby. I promise. I surprised her by lifting her off her feet and cradling her in my arms. Since you answered the door in that outfit, I'm guessing Delia isn't here. She has family in Hermosa Beach. She's staying at a cousin's for the night? Remind me to send her a thank you gift. Perhaps a car. I began walking down a hallway looking for a bedroom. When I set her down on the edge of the mattress, I realized that her foot was bandaged. What happened here?
I fixed my tattoo.
The feather one. She changed the one I had replicated on my chest?
Yes.
She leaned down to the dressing and slowly peeled part of it back. I held my breath until I realized she hadn't changed the tattoo. She had added to it. Just as I had done, there was a name scripted above the feather. Graham. Having no words, I leaned in and kissed her. When we came up for air, she pointed her eyes back down at her foot for me to follow.
Don't you want to see the rest of the changes I made?
I squinted my eyes.
More ink?
Go ahead. Take it off. She bit her bottom lip and lifted her shapely leg up. If there was any doubt in my mind that she was the perfect woman for me, seeing what she had done would have erased every last shred of it. I stared down, emotions choking me up. I don't know what to say. It's beautiful. Written in the same script as my name above the feather was Chloe beneath it. I love you, Graham. And your daughter, too. I know it's early and we need to go slow, but I want to be part of her life. I want to be involved. You were right. Just because of how things worked out with my own father doesn't mean it can't work. I want to pick her up from dance classes and burn cookies with her on the weekends. I want to watch her grow up and learn from her incredible father. I don't just love you, Graham. I caught a tear as it fell down her cheek. I love Chloe, too. Hearing those words, it felt like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders. She loves me and my daughter. It was the first time since I was a child that I felt like I had a real family again. I came in here with so much pent-up emotions that I was nervous I wouldn't be gentle with you. But somehow you softened me. I love you too, gorgeous. More than anything. I'm in better control now, although I still need to be inside of you. Tell me. I began to strip out of my clothes. Do you want me to make love to you now and fuck you hard later, or fuck you hard now and save sweet for seconds? She didn't answer right away. I made quick work shedding my clothes, and as I hooked my fingers into my boxers, I stopped and looked to her for an answer. What's it going to be, Soraya? I pulled down my boxer briefs, revealing I was fully ready for her, either choice she gave. She licked her lips. Fuck first, sweet second. Good choice. She was sitting on the edge of the bed. I removed her panties and felt the wetness already between her legs before I lifted her. Wrap your legs around my waist. I moved us to the wall, pinned her back against it, and wasted no time lifting her onto my cock. Fuck. I let out a groan as I pulled her down onto me. It was amazing that it had only been less than 2 weeks since the last time I was inside of her. The way that I longed for this made it feel like an eternity that we were apart. I tried to go slow at first, making sure her body was ready for me. But when she moaned and told me she loved me and loved my cock inside of her, all bets were off. I pounded into her hard and fast. At one point I worried that I was hurting her because of the sound of her body slamming repeatedly against the wall, but when I tried to go easier, she begged for me to go even harder. There was nothing better than hearing the woman you loved telling you that she loved your cock and wanted it harder. We both came long and hard, yelling out as we released together at the same time. I was sure the neighbors had to have heard. Hell, I wanted them to hear. I wanted the whole fucking world to know what this woman did to me. I mumbled against her lips. I fucking love you, Soraya Venedetta. I love you too, Suit. I think I fell in love with you before I even met you. I smirked. It must have been my incredible charm over text. Actually, you were pretty much an asshole. It was the pictures you kept on your phone that made me realize that there was a beautiful man underneath that heart of steel. I like the pictures that I received this morning much better than the ones that were there before we met. Perhaps I should make daily snapshots like that part of the restitution you owe me for the grief you've put me through. I can do that. You're easy. I didn't say that was all your restitution. Let me guess. You'll take additional payment in the form of blowjobs? That sounds like a start. Her eyebrows jumped. A start? How long will I be indebted to you to make amends, exactly?
I cupped her cheeks. I'd say 60 should do it.
60 days? I think I can handle that.
Years, Soraya. I expect sexy snapshots and blowjobs for the next 60 years. Her face turned serious. There's nothing I would actually like more. Good. Because you really didn't have a choice in the matter. This was the first and last time you'll leave me.
Epilogue. Soraya. Chloe slurped her frozen hot chocolate as we sat together at Serendipity 3. Graham kept texting me. He was freaking out because he was stuck in traffic after taking Mimi to her first day back at jazzercise class this morning. I knew he wanted tonight to go perfectly, but I reassured him that Chloe was content and that there was no reason for him to rush. Of course, I understood why he was nervous. To Chloe, though, it was just like any other night having dinner out with us.
"Can I have a sip?" I asked.
She nodded and repositioned the straw to face in my direction.
"Mmm, that's so good. No wonder why you like it."
Chloe rested her chin in her palms and confessed.
"My mom got mad at me this morning."
"Why?" I asked with my mouth full of the beverage.
"I wanted pink hair like you."
Genevieve must love me.
"Uh-oh. What did you do?" "I was painting my hair with my watercolors."
Trying not to let her see me laugh, I smiled inwardly. It touched me that she wanted to be like me. "Chloe, don't try to color it again. It doesn't work anyway, as you probably discovered, right? Someday, I'll do it for you the right way, if you still want pink hair by then." She was beaming.
"You will?"
I loved when I could see Graham's expressions in her face.
"Yeah, but not anytime soon."
I made a mental note to look for some hot pink clip-in extensions for the next time we'd play dress-up. Chloe and I had a ton of fun on weekends when she stayed with Graham and me. She loved to put on my dresses and attempt to walk in my heels. I was sure Genevieve would have flipped if she knew half the things we did. To Chloe, I was more like a fun big sister than a disciplinarian. A few months after reuniting with Graham in Hermosa Beach, I moved out of my Brooklyn apartment and into his condo. While I liked having my own space, it didn't make sense to keep the apartment when my insatiable man insisted I spend every night in his bed. So, I gave in. And honestly, it made life easier since now he only had to go back and forth between two places, Chloe's house and ours. When Graham walked into the restaurant, he was weaving around tables, looking flustered.
"You made it," I smiled.
"Damn traffic."
"Damn is a swear, Graham Cracker,"
Chloe chided.
"Give me some sugar, sugar cookie,"
he said to Chloe as he leaned his cheek in for a smooch. Graham gave me a chaste kiss on the lips, then sat down. He was sweating and took a napkin to his entire face. He looked at me, and I placed my palm on his knee. "I love you," I mouthed. Fresh beads of sweat formed on his forehead. After the waitress brought him a water and a menu, he began nervously ripping apart a different napkin. When he started to click his watch back and forth, I knew he was about to do it. Then, he began to speak.
"So, Chloe, there's something I need to talk to you about tonight," he said.
Chloe just continued to sip her drink while she looked at him innocently with her big doe eyes. He continued.
"I've been keeping something from you."
"Did you take one of my toys home by mistake?"
He laughed nervously.
"No. It's about your dad.
What about Daddy?
Graham inhaled slowly, then exhaled.
Your father, Liam. He loved you very much. I know losing him was hard. He'll always be your dad. But there are different kinds of dads. Sometimes children can have more than one. Like your friend Molly, for example. She has no mother, but two dads who are married. What I'm trying to say is, I'm actually one of your dads, too.
She was silent, then said,
Were you married to my father who died? Mom told me having two dads is called being gay.
No.
Graham looked at me, and we both couldn't help but laugh a little. He continued,
I was with your mother before him. Genevieve and I made you together. I didn't know about it at the time, though. Then your mother and your father, Liam, got married. Liam fell in love with you and became your dad. He believed he was your only dad. I only found out you existed after Liam passed away. When I saw your face, I knew you were mine. I know it's confusing, baby girl.
He placed his hand on her chin.
See how much we look alike? That's because you're my daughter.
She reached her little hand over to his face and began to examine his features. It was adorable when she said,
I always thought I knew you from somewhere.
Yeah, from the moment we met, right? That's because we're connected.
Graham smiled.
You're really my dad?
I am.
He whispered, his voice shaky.
Wow.
Chloe stayed still for a moment as she processed everything. Then, without warning, she leapt into his arms. Graham closed his eyes, looking so happy and relieved. I just sat back and enjoyed the sight of them hugging tightly. Chloe's reaction confirmed that we'd made the right decision to tell her tonight. Genevieve had originally given us trouble about it. She wanted to be here. But Graham promised to sit down with the two of them after he dropped Chloe back home later. There was a reason for the timing of this conversation. When Graham flashed me a questioning look over Chloe's shoulder, I nodded, giving him silent approval to give her the other piece of news.
So, Soraya and I sort of have something else to tell you.
Her eyes widened with excitement.
You're taking me to Disney World?
No, he chuckled. But we'll go there someday, all right?
I chimed in. You know how you always said you wished you had a brother or sister?
Yeah?
Graham placed his arm around me.
Well, that's about to happen. Soraya and I are having a baby. That means you're going to be a big sister.
At first, Chloe didn't say anything, but when she started to jump up and down for joy in her seat, Graham and I let out a collective sigh of relief. She got out of her seat and walked over to me.
Where is it?
It's in here. I pointed to my belly as she placed her hand on it.
Is it going to come out with pink hair?
I laughed. No, but we'll find out who he or she looks like in 6 months. She started to speak into my stomach.
Hey, in there, I'm your sister.
Graham and I looked at each other and smiled. When Chloe looked up at me, I nearly lost it myself when she said,
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being so sweet to me. The truth was, if Graham's daughter hadn't opened her heart to me, I didn't know that he and I could have lasted. Her innate goodness made that possible. The waitress came by and asked, Is everything okay over here? Chloe proudly exclaimed,
Yes! I'm gonna be a big sister and I have two dads! I'm gay! She clearly misunderstood what Genevieve had explained about her classmates' parents, interpreting it to mean that any person with two dads is automatically gay. We'd have to explain it to her later. The waitress thought it was adorable. Graham interjected.
You know, the word gay means happy.
Chloe smiled, with her head still on my belly. Then I'm very, very gay.
Graham. 7 months later. Dear Ida, it's been a while since I've written to you. You might remember me as stuck-up suit, celibate in Manhattan, fucked in Manhattan, and 50 Shades of Morgan. Same guy. Well, tonight I'm happy to say I've earned a new name. Poopface in Manhattan. That's right. I just looked at myself in the bathroom mirror and noticed that I literally have shit on my forehead. Don't ask me how it got there. You know what the funny thing is? I've never been happier in my life. That's right. This guy with shit on his face is deliriously happy. That realization prompted this message. You remember that smart-mouthed girl I met on the train, the one I used to write in about? Her name is Soraya. I knocked her up. Can you believe it? She gave birth to my son a month ago. I've trapped her forever, and now she's producing little dark-haired Italian Morgans. I have a son, Ida. A son. Thus the shit on my forehead right now. Pretty sure it's from when I changed his diaper a little while ago. Yes, the poop is still there. I haven't wiped it off yet because... Have I mentioned I'm deliriously happy? I haven't gotten sleep in 6 days. 6 days, Ida. I didn't even know humans could survive on no sleep. But apparently you can. I'm proof. You know why it's all good? Because I'm deliriously happy. On no sleep. There's one thing, though, that my life is missing. See, Soraya won't let me make her an honest woman. She thinks she has to lose all this baby weight, fit into a fancy white dress, and walk down an aisle. Our date is set for 6 months from now. But I just can't wait another day. I want her to be my wife. I know we don't need a piece of paper to validate what we have, but I'm selfish. I want it all because I love her so much. So my question to you is, what can I do to convince her to marry me tomorrow? Poop face in Manhattan. I pressed send, and Soraya's phone chimed. I watched as she read the message I'd just sent. Not to Ida's email account, but directly to her. She was sitting right next to me in bed with her big, beautiful tits hanging out as she fed our son, Lorenzo. Lucky kid. He's doing what I'd like to be doing right now. She laughed to herself, then typed away on her phone for a while before hitting send. My phone vibrated. Dear Poopface, perhaps a better name for you would be Sleepless in Manhattan, because from the sound of your rambling message, you are wired. I think while you are deliriously happy, your son keeping you awake is turning you into part zombie, part spaz. By the way, no one has ever looked sexier with shit on their face, but please wipe it off. That said, you are officially the best father in the world to our children, Chloe and Lorenzo. That poop on your forehead right now is just another example of that. I've never loved you more. I'm starting to realize that if making it legal means that much to you, then it's the least I could do to thank you. I say tomorrow we head down to City Hall and make me a Morgan. Love always. Mrs. Morgan in Manhattan. P.S. We'll take the train. This concludes Stuck Up Suit by V. Keeland and Penelope Ward. Narrated by Maxine Mitchell and Joe Arden. Copyright 2016 by V. Keeland and Penelope Ward. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with V. Keeland, care of the Rebecca Friedman Literary Agency, and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.